Welcome to the New York Times Popcast. You are 3 a.m. in the hookah bar of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica. Benito is back. It's 2019, just before Christmas. Music critics all across the country were safely curling into their holiday plans and thinking, oh, I'm so excited to not have any music of import come out over the next week and a half. LOL. So there's nothing like one of the most important releases of the year coming out on Christmas Eve. I've been at the Times almost 11 years. That has not happened. So shouts to Bad Bunny for doing that. Bad Bunny put out his first proper full-length album. It's called Por Siempre. It's spelled out very differently, but that's what it says. And I've been wanting to do a podcast on Bad Bunny for a really long time. Those of you who saw my 2018 songs list know that he was at the top of my songs list. And at least with one of my guests today, I've been having this conversation about when we're going to do it. And now it is time. So get effing ready. Three guests today. To my left, it's Eduardo Cepeda.
How you doing?
Good. How are you? Thanks for being here. Eduardo writes a regular column on reggaeton history at Remezcla and also contributes to Pitchfork and The Nation. Susie Exposito is here. Susie is the Latin music editor of Rolling Stone.
Hey, what's up?
Happy to have you. I'm sorry that you are right behind this pole. I'm going to maybe move my chair.
We're just stealing glances.
Yeah, no. Okay. I'm going to move a lot on this podcast because there's a lot to move. And to my right, not new to the podcast, it's Isabella Herrera.
Hello.
Fresh back from DR.
Exactly.
Isabella is the music editor of Remezcla and also part of the curatorial committee at MoMA PS1's warm-up series.
Yes. You got
go
it.
Go there this summer. It's always unrelenting fire, and I'm extremely excited for what you guys have coming this summer. We have a lot to say about Bad Bunny this week. Let's start with the album. We were chatting a little bit before we started recording. We were talking about favorite song. Maybe let's just quickly go around the horn and do that, and then we'll talk big picture about the album. So we'll start again, Isabella.
Yes, I think because I'm Dominican, and for various other reasons, yes, it has to be La Romana, sure, with El Alfa,
El Alfa,
for sure.
Can't wait till the El Alfa podcast.
Ooh.
That's deep 2019 podcast.
That's like a 2025 podcast.
We'll find our way there.
Okay.
La Romana is the song that we opened with, and it's kind of two songs in one. There's a beat switch. We'll talk about that a little bit later. And that is, there are not that many collaborations on this record, but that collaboration is important, obviously.
One of three. I guess four, counting the Ricky Martin one. So, yeah.
It's like a lot of like,
yeah.
But that's like a very sort of like musically and geographically relevant collaboration. Okay, Susie, what do you got?
My favorite song off of Por Siempre is Tenemos Que Hablar, because as a recovering mall punk,
recovering implies you're not actively still embracing.
Actually, you know what? I only said that for my reputation. No.
Just embrace it, Susan.
Podcast is where reputations come to die.
The jig is up. I'm a mall punk.
Step into your truth. That's what they were here for. Step into your truth.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk later, hopefully, about pop punk in the 2000s.
Absolutely.
And sort of the uncles and fathers of this song specifically, which I would love to hear more about. Eduardo?
R-L-N-D-T or Rolandito.
Comes near the end of the album, yeah.
Because I'm really melodramatic sometimes, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That song, well,
you've got an hour.
That.
You have an hour today, so right. Feel free to get as deep into it as you want. Okay, so three different guests. Mine is La Romana as well.
Good choice.
I thought so. I liked it both experiencing each part individually and also the kind of, I'm like punching my two fists together, the hard juxtaposition that this song takes you through. A question that I had, because I think we all really like the album. We all really enjoy the album and all also feel the import of the album. I wonder if we can talk a little bit about what Bad Bunny is doing on this album specifically that he had not previously done. What is the thing that's advancing the narrative? Because I think up until this came out, you can say that Bad Bunny was flexible, versatile, stylistically interesting, bending his voice in 100 different directions. Like, that's all stuff that was already in motion. And he was doing it without releasing a proper album. What about this format, or what about these specific songs, do you guys think push the narrative a little bit further?
I think he was trying to prove that he could do an album.
Okay.
Instead of just releasing singles, or, you know, possibly doing like one of those 30-track streaming.
Right.
You know,
juggernauts.
Right.
Yeah.
And he was trying to prove that he could bring back the album form. I mean, not bring it back, not that it went anywhere necessarily, right. But
indie rock bands would like a word with you.
Right, right.
Merge Records would a word.
And you know, we were talking about this earlier, in the Fader profile.
Yeah.
He kind of mentioned that, you know, he like talked about how he really wanted to kind of challenge his fans a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think he really did do that, and he did it perfectly.
And with the idea of the album format, because I think we are, broadly speaking, at a moment where the line between album qua album and album qua just collection of data things is really starting to get blurry. So I in what way does this feel like an album qua album?
I mean, I feel like it has an overall theme.
Yeah.
You know, definitely a lot of nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would think that's the central theme of the album.
Right.
Is nostalgia.
I just feel like also he kind of built on his reputation and thematically of exploring like these very melodramatic concepts, exploring nostalgia, exploring heartbreak and all of these things. And he kind of just like consolidated that into one project, whether it's in a different, you know, genre, different styles, whatever. He kind of just built on that and brought it into one project.
In an interview that we ran on Rolling Stone with Tiny.
Plug it.
Yeah, I'm going to.
Yeah.
Damn right.
Link in bio. Let's go.
No, we, Elias Light interviewed his producer, Tiny, of the Looney Tunes crew. And the first thing Tiny said that they talked about before making the album was the Fast and the Furious franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just something that I think, like, what Bad Bunny does so well is he touches upon just like hallmarks of our generations, like youth, but in a way that also connects to his culture, his island. He always brings it back home.
And a lot of this album was made in his hometown, if I'm not mistaken.
You know,
we've all read, obviously, Julianne Shepherd. Julianne's not here today. She had an emergency meeting come up at work, but we're all obviously thinking of Julianne.
And thinking
about the outfit she might have worn if she was here.
Man.
Like, we're definitely, I mean, I personally,
a strong
I'm thinking,
print.
Yeah,
I
strong undoubtedly.
Print, great, epic
great,
frames.
Great silhouettes. Yeah,
yeah.
Like just strong heel.
Yes.
Maybe a wedge,
yes.
Like kind of a wedge situation,
or
maybe
a sneaker.
Could be.
Yeah.
So anyway, Shep, we're here and we're talking about your story. but if I'm not mistaken, in that story, when Julianne went to Puerto Rico in the Airbnb house on like kind of the other side of his hometown from where he grew up, they were setting up and doing a lot of recording there. And my sense is some of that stuff is what we're hearing on the album, maybe?
Yeah. From what I understand, he recorded much of the album in that like... He went on a social media blackout over the summer and kind of was like, all right, what
Who
do I
want? Who can relate?
Who hasn't?
For real.
Yeah.
And yeah, he was like, I need space and time to think about what I want to create. And then in like that 30-day period, he started to create some of the songs on the album.
Kids, let that be a lesson to you. Everybody go delete your social media and go make something special for the next 2 months. I mean, listen to podcasts. Still listen to podcasts. But like other than that, like don't actually communicate with anybody. Okay. So obviously there's an additional significance to him recording those songs where he recorded it. The anecdote in the story that's so good is the house that he had rented was like a house that him and his friends would like drive by or like ride their bikes by when he was a child and was like, oh, that's the best house in our town. It's called Vega Baja. Is that correct?
Vega Baja.
Yeah, that's the best house. And like maybe someday. And then it just popped up on Airbnb. So just imagine the internal emotion of doing, achieving the thing, the specific thing that you set out to as a kid.
Yeah.
I also think, like, for him in particular, going back to, like, the Puerto Rico connection, it's something that I feel like in a lot of, like, the English language coverage of him, a lot of people might not get just because of, like, the language barrier, that his music is very much about Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. It includes references to Puerto Rican culture and sports and, like, other earlier genres. And I think that's something that a lot of people might not understand, that he's calling back to the reggaeton OGs. He's calling back to some of these, like, salsa OGs in his work. And that's not necessarily something you get just, like, on first listen, because you might be like, Drake collaboration, beat switch, that's cool. But, like, you don't know that there's, like, more layers to it. And I think, you know, you asked what has this album done? How has he pushed the narrative forward? A story that we published on Remezcla, like, a few days after the album came out, that was actually in the works before we knew the album came out, by Frances Ola Santiago. She kind of talked about his political impact in Puerto Rico over the last year. And I think that's something else that maybe a lot of people who are new to the Bad Bunny story might not know. Something that was definitely a point of growth in his story last year, I think, was bringing more attention to these issues of his island.
Post-Maria,
yes. Yeah. Like, whether it's, whether exactly. Yeah. Whether it's, like, his performance on The Tonight Show, which he specifically, you know, denounced the Trump administration for their negligence after the hurricane, or, you know, he got into a very public argument with a school teacher about the education crisis happening in Puerto Rico and all the school closures happening there. And even the governor of Puerto Rico got involved.
Yeah.
And then, you know, directly tied to the album, I think the song Solo de Mi, which the video was about domestic violence and gender-based violence. And I think in Puerto Rico specifically, there's been a big movement over the last few months talking about this. It's interesting that this is happening all in the context of this in Puerto Rico. And I think that's something people might not know, that I feel like it adds another layer. That's not to say that he's not extremely contentious there. I think a lot of people see him as this, like, center of moral panic and, you know, he's vulgar and explicit.
Generationally.
Like, yes. Yeah. I mean, there's some people within even our generation, I would say, that feel that way.
Wow. Shouts to those 20-somethings really, really worried about moral panic.
Right. Yeah.
Wait, have you watched the news? You want to talk about moral panic?
I don't know. Maybe it's just, like, rockists who think that, you know?
Also, Puerto Rican rockist. If you're a Puerto Rican rockist, please email podcast@nytimes.com. I need to hear about this.
I have a lot of rockists on my Facebook still.
Oh my God.
That's why
God.
I keep it, so I can argue with them.
Wow. Yep.
I mean, the other side.
I mean, cancellation is tough, but wow, that opinion's canceled. Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah,
Moral panics. Jesus.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that in these days, being a pop star, you kind of have to be a human weather vane for, like, how, you know, your people are feeling, like, how what's happening in your culture. And Bad Bunny is in this very unique position where he feels obligated, and actually, like, you know, in a way that he wants to be. He's in constant conversation with what's happening on the island and, like, with his people's struggle. I also have to say he's been hanging out a lot with Residente, you know, one of his idols as a teen.
Sure.
I mean, a lot of us listened to Calle 13 when we were teens, also, whether or not, you know.
Tough week for Residente.
Really tough week for him.
There's a contrast there to, like, how willing they are to listen, you know?
Right. I mean, Bad Bunny is, like, very, very receptive. I mean, I don't know if Solo de Mi would have happened, you know, without the feminist demonstration. You know, they occupied the governor's house in Puerto Rico, which is a huge deal. And the fact that, like, a trap singer would even address something like that is pretty unprecedented, I think. So I think he's just constantly trying to be on the pulse of what's happening in Puerto Rico, but also in conversation with what's happening globally, you know, by collaborating with, you know, for example, Balvin, who's definitely got a more, like, global-oriented agenda.
Did you say centrist? I'm sorry.
No.
I'm sorry.
No, I did not.
My headphones just seem weird to and you interviewed Bad Bunny as well.
Yes.
And this came up in your piece also.
Yeah.
And I wonder, when you were speaking to him, did he strike you as someone who was obviously engaged and kind of open to the learning process, like sort of knowing what he knows, but also knowing what he doesn't know? Or was he just like, it's my time and I'm speaking out and I need to be as loud as possible about kind of all the things right now?
I think he's generally a sensitive person. I have to say that he keeps most of his feelings on things close to the vest, unless it's on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
So,
fair. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But no, he said, you know, I have to speak for my people. This is like, he said, you know, if I have a platform like this, I have to use it for my people, because that's how he was able to ascend to the place that he's in right now.
Let's listen to Solo to Me.
No me vuelvas a decir, bebé. Yo no soy tuyo ni de nadie, yo soy solo de mí. No me vuelvas a decir, bebé. Ya tú lo sabes que yo no estoy ni un poquito pa' ti. No me vuelvas a decir, bebé. Yo no soy tuyo ni que me quisiste, te lo agradezco, hey, pero no te pertenezco. Hoy voy pa'l agua pa' ver qué pesco. Baby, tú eres un atraso, pon lo que tú quieras en Facebook que yo no te voy a hacer caso. Echa pa' allá, no me eche el brazo y no me vuelvas a decir, bebé.
I actually wrote a piece a few months ago for Boston's NPR, WBUR.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I talked a lot about is how after the nail incident, right, in Spain,
mm-hmm.
how he essentially told some trolls on Twitter, like, well, you know, I'll knock up your girlfriend.
Right.
And people kind of came after him
and
for
just
that.
For just to frame that slightly. So what happened is he was in Spain and went to a nail salon and was denied service because he's not a woman.
Right.
Because he's a man. And then...
And he went on a little...
He complained about it.
He complained about it.
A progressive complaint.
What is it, 1960?
Right.
He said that. And, you know, some people started calling him gay on Twitter. And
mm-hmm.
so his, you know, this deep-seated masculinity mm-hmm. some people have just kind of kicked in. And he went on the defensive and said some problematic things.
Yeah.
And apologized when he realized how bad they were. And then deleted his Twitter. And that's when he went on the Twitter break, right?
Mm-hmm.
For a few months. But to me, that kind of shows that he's at least willing to listen instead of just arguing with people on Twitter all day and saying that he's right, asserting his position.
One of the at least recurring visual themes with Bad Bunny is he does sort of toy with notions of masculinity, and this is something mm-hmm. that has come up in various points in his career. So when that happened on Twitter, is that the first time that he's like verbally engaged in that way? Because I can't imagine it's the first time that people have said, oh, you paint your nails, that's gay,
right,
or whatever. There's got to have been previous moments.
But it seems like he's always kind of poking at that a little too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
I saw him actually in Boston like a month after that or something mm-hmm. like that. And he had a little boy come on stage and do a song with him. And what I thought was really cool is towards the end of, you know, he finished a song and he hugged the kid. And then he kept hugging him and he wouldn't let go. And he kept talking to him in his ear. Like, mm-hmm. looked like he was kind of encouraging him. But everybody in the room was just kind of like, all the men in the room were kind of like really uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of rolling their joints and just kind of looking at him, like, what is this guy doing? Like, and then he wouldn't let go of the kid. He just kept hugging him and hugging him. And so it was like this really tender moment.
Right.
Where he was just like showing, like, not being afraid of being affectionate towards another man.
Right. I mean, and that sort of his blend of like sincerity and provocation is, and I think it's careful. Like, mm-hmm. it doesn't feel arbitrary to me. It always feels, anytime you've seen something like that, it always feels very pointed when he's doing it. I mean, he wants people to be uncomfortable.
And it also doesn't feel like it comes from a PR person. You know,
right.
I mean, like,
no,
it feels so natural.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't feel regulated in any way. Yeah.
I think that especially in Latina culture, it is increasingly like important to have conversations about like gender and sexuality and how like, you know, one doesn't necessarily decide the other.
Right.
And like, I think that it's great that he toys around with it. You know, like he, I mean, I think that he toys around with ideas of masculinity. I may not give him credit for smashing the patriarchy because he mm-hmm. gets manicures.
But yeah, when I see things like Bad Bunny, a feminist icon, I'm like, like it's great. Like it's great that he's doing these things. Right, but
yeah,
know.
No, he's definitely.
You don't have to say anything for clicks. It's not necessary. You know, just wait till it's true to say it. It's okay.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, I think that him, you know, being a cisgender man is. The fact that he like wears hoop earrings is like it gives us that much more room or it gives that much more room for like more gender nonconforming people mm-hmm. to be like visible and feel safer in being visible.
Yeah. If we can go back a couple of years, sort of like do a quick Bad Bunny history lesson. When he first emerged and first really kind of came to attention two to three years ago, from your guys' perspective, did he seem almost too improbable to be as big as he ended up being? Because especially if you compare it to the peers of the era, it was very clear he was operating from a different playbook. And I wonder, because I remember looking and thinking, this is great. Who knows if people will care about this, like in the broadest sense, but here it is. And it's the single most relevant, poignant, and kind of like musically adept thing happening right now. But I wonder if you guys felt that on any kind of visceral level or critical level 2 to 3 years ago when he first popped up.
Personally, I felt like that's exactly why he became as big mm-hmm. as he was, because he set himself apart from a lot of his peers, mm-hmm. because he showed this kind of versatility or this kind of flexibility that maybe a lot of other rappers at the time weren't showing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think since the beginning, like I said before, since the beginning, his lyrics have always dealt with heartbreak and pain and all these things. So I think that he's always kind of walked this line of, you know, appealing to like a pop audience at the same time as he's been able to like speak to whatever, like, you know, Latin trap or other Urbano listeners.
You know, you see a lot being made about Bad Bunny's rise happening partially because Anuel was in jail.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true. Like,
mm-hmm. No.
I think he would have cut through no matter
they
what.
Don't
he
seem
was
to,
so unique.
They don't really solve the same problem.
Right. No.
Exactly. Yeah. And so he would have happened with or without Anuel around.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just kind of like Twitter, just kind of doing what Twitter does.
Just opinions. So many opinions.
I mean, his first big single, I guess, was Diles,
yeah,
right? Like
I was going to say, should we play?
That was his first one.
Should we play Diles? Yeah. Okay.
And that was all about like, you know, making sure a woman is having fun when, mm-hmm. you know, having sex and that she's fully engaged, which, you know, there can always be more songs about that. Why not?
Okay, so we're going to play D-List and everybody should take notes.
Dice que le gusta hacerlo con mis temas de trap. Y si te preguntan por qué para el sexo yo soy tu fap, diles que yo me sé tus poses favoritas, que te hablo malo y que eso te excita, que te hago todo lo que necesitas para hacerte venir y diles que yo me sé tus poses favoritas, que te hablo malo y que eso te excita. Hacerlo dentro del carro y piche al hotel. Que tengo ganas, bebé, y no hay tiempo para perder. Quitarle tinteado, nadie nos va a ver. Estamos bellacos y queremos meter. Tú y yo solito, darle a apagar el cel. Que te voy a hacer lo que no te hace él. Y wow, los cristales del carro se empañan.
Obviously, Tiny produced a lot of this record. And Susie, you mentioned Calle 13 mm-hmm. before. And Bad Bunny being kind of an inheritor of some of that, of some of the music and also the politics and the attitude.
Yeah.
Can we talk then about, because Bad Bunny is rapping and singing, he's also very versatile cross genre, but can you talk about the seeds of kind of 1.0 reggaeton explosion, not 1.0 actual reggaeton, but the sort of like the mid-2000s reggaeton on Bad Bunny? And on his music. Can we talk about that in terms of sound, ideas, and politics?
Bad Bunny told me that when he was a teen, like, he was listening to Daddy Yankee, but he was also listening to Arcade Fire and Linkin Park, you know, at the
same
time.
One of those bands is good.
I will agree to disagree.
Wait, which one do you think I think is good? Wait, this is going to be interesting. Which one do you think I think is good? Space. Okay, you can say it. It's a safe space.
Actually, I love all of them equally.
Fine. All right.
Yeah.
I'll agree with you, but
Arcade Fire is trash. But okay,
there we go.
It's fine. There we go. Just say okay,
that's an acceptable opinion.
I damn right it's an acceptable opinion. Oh, I feel really unburdened. Oh,
but I don't think that he would sound the way he does if he didn't have such an eclectic list of influences. But Eduardo, do you want to, as the reggaeton historian, do you want to talk about the mid 2000s?
More about how the genre fluidity he's showing in his music.
Yeah.
It goes to that. I mean, just it's a generational thing too. Like I interviewed Khalid when he was first coming up and he was telling me the same kind of thing. Like, you know, he actually listened to Daddy Yankee and Father John Misty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so
it's one of those artists is good. We're going to keep doing this.
We're going to do this all day.
Yeah. We're going to keep doing this.
But I mean, so speaking to the reggaeton thing, he shows it to us, not just in his like production and the sound and working with Tiny, but like even literally in sampling Plan B on Cuando Perreabas. And so I just think, by the way, that's such a cool sample because the song is so somber in this weird way. And then it goes into this party anthem and it just feels right. Like it's just one of the most masterful samples I've seen in a while. So I just thought that was a cool thing that he did to kind of really make sure to shout it out.
Yeah.
Talk about how much it influenced him. Yeah.
I think it's also interesting that the narrative around his, you know, eclecticism is like, wow, this is so surprising. Mm-hmm. This is so unforeseen. Like as though like Latinos cannot listen to multiple different genres, as though we cannot be eclectic listeners or whatever, musical omnivores, you know? And to me, it's like, well, that's just the time that we live in. We live in this globalized music moment. So, of course, these influences are all going to be happening at the same time and appearing on the record, you know?
Yeah.
But do you think there's still a reluctance of some performers to be as inclusive in their own music making as opposed to, like, I think people, there's a difference between people listening widely and then
performing yes, widely. I understand. Yeah. I think you're right. I don't think Bad Bunny had to worry about the reluctance in this moment because he had the flexibility and the time to have built his career already in the last 2 to 3 years.
Right.
So this album was a space to be more explorative and more experimental for him. And that's okay. You know, he didn't have to worry about like, are people going to get this or not? You know,
also he's a person who has really built his career working with other people in a variety of contexts. Mm-hmm. So I think if you look at a lot of artists who start off with like, it's my album, they're my songs. They're very preoccupied with like, well, I have to be like, identifiably me all the time.
Right.
In this very
building
fixed
a
way.
Persona, building an identity, as a performer.
But
sure.
But he's sort of nomadic. He can go on any kind of song in any kind of space and be Bad Bunny. And I think that helps in the sense that you didn't feel forced into like a fixed reading of him because he constantly was revising the readings.
Yeah. That to me is really what gives him the longevity for a career in pop music, because he's able to navigate all these different worlds. He's able to be nomadic. Like, he really doesn't have to stick to one definition of who he is for the time being.
Should we play just like a good 2017? I mean, I have the Wikipedia discography up, and it's it's like longer than War and Peace. I mean, it's nuts. I mean, should we play Creepy Kush? Like,
yeah.
Okay.
Tu no me te cabra. I like that one too.
Yeah.
What Isabella said. We'll get to Creepy Kush later. Extreme Cardi B voice.
Y Yeah, estoy subiendo como espuma, prendiéndole en la cara al que no fuma. Ando con Adidas veloces como Puma, el Undertaker saliendo de la bruma. Y se apagan las luces, prende el wax para que me muse. Tú no metes cabra, tú no luces. No es el Mercedes, es quien lo conduce. Y dime que son retro sin un Jordan que las use. Yeah, evita el delay. Y si no te ponchamos, te damos doble play. No existe replay, son Miami sin LeBron. Nos vamos en switch, aunque me enfiche. Me tiran, pero soy un biche. Hueva loca que me la chiche. Yo matando y tú mirando en la bleche. Yeah.
This is Sam Sifton, food editor of the New York Times. Whether you're just starting out in the kitchen or looking to up your game, NYT Cooking is here with more than 19,000 times-tested recipes and all the help you need to cook them well. Subscribe today at nytcooking.com/podcast.
A thing that I wanted to talk about is the fluidity, not just within what Bad Bunny has been doing, but also I feel like more broadly the eclecticism, Isabella, that you were talking about. You see people moving a little bit more cleanly across what used to be slightly more fixed genre lines. And I wonder if you can talk about the bigger picture of what's happening right now, not just with Bad Bunny, but also Balvin, Maluma, Ozuna, and so on, that's creating the circumstances for this kind of cross-genre pollinations.
I think part of that, and I think Eduardo can speak to this more as well, is just, you know, the pop transformation that reggaeton and other urbano genres have undergone in the last 15 years.
Yep.
Like, they've created the context for this kind of versatility. It's now a mainstream form of pop music, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily a surprising or unexpected playing field for them to be able to move between these genres.
I think what's kind of great about Bad Bunny and some of what other people are doing is it sounds a little different than just the general pop. Like, for example, on the reggaeton side of it, like, you know, there's stuff, maybe I won't mention names, but there's stuff that just to me sounds like, it's like the Bee Gees of reggaeton.
Oh,
you
know? No way, you can't say that and be like, you're not going to mention facts.
I mean, it's just when you take a pop song, formulaic pop song, and add the, you know,
dembow rhythm.
Look,
it's reggaeton.
Add a dembow to it, and it's called reggaeton. And, you know, Bad Bunny avoids that somehow. And I think he's very careful to not do that, at least on his own songs. You know, so his reggaeton still slaps.
Right.
I can't believe you did the Brothers Gibb like that. I can't believe you.
I mean, I like the Bee Gees. I really, like, Saturday Night Fever is a great album. But it's not real disco.
Oh my God.
What is real disco?
Wow.
That's my old elitist DJ.
Wow.
I'm from Miami, okay?
I didn't know this was where this was. This is, Eduardo, Pedro would like you.
Thank
to
you.
Know
those, right? Thank you.
Man, y'all are cold.
It's a very gender. I don't know. It's a very gendered read happening right now. I don't know what's going on. I'm gonna stay out of this.
Yeah,
it's great pop music with a cool rhythm.
Anyway, sorry.
You sure you don't want to name any names?
I'm too early in my career.
Oh my God!
I'm just gonna be honest.
Oh my God! All right. Okay. If you guess, yes.
Man.
John, you can do this. Like, you don't have to worry because you're like, yeah, I work at the New York Times.
Right.
I can say whatever the hell I want.
If anybody has issues with what Eduardo said, at me.
I'm going to hold you to that.
Please do. I'll take all comers on that. That's also an extremely accurate take.
Having said that, he has songs that slap, like Chantaje.
Of course, yes. No, we don't want to deny.
Is that him or Shakira?
Well, he's on it. He's on it.
That's right. He's near it. We don't want to deny Maluma his slaps. But, yes, that's a real thing. Maluma came up the last time you were here, Isabella.
Yes. I don't remember what we said.
Maybe we'll go back and listen to it and see if our opinions have been consistent. I think they have been, though, if I remember correctly. I forget who it was, but someone said the word urbano.
I don't know. I think all of us said it at some point.
Can we talk through that a little bit as an umbrella term for what's happening right now? Where does the term come from? What's the sort of germ of it, and how wide is the adoption of it?
I had a piece. I wrote a piece for Pitchfork about it. I didn't end up doing any of this in it, but I started off talking about, you know, hip hop in the 70s in New York because brown people were involved. And, you know, I talked later about Vico C and DJ Negro before they were using dembow rhythms and they were doing rap in Espanol. And I think that's maybe some of the starting points you can look at Urbano. I don't know if you would agree.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's just an umbrella term that includes a lot of different styles. Reggaeton, what we call Latin trap, Dominican dembow, merengue urbano, a lot of other kinds of different styles.
Has it been more widely used, as an umbrella term, is it more widely used now than it was 5 years ago or 10 years ago?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I feel like maybe it's just used as a catch-all now that artists are exploring all these different styles. You know, they're not just defining themselves as reggaetoneros.
Right.
They're also doing a trap song. They're also doing, you know, whatever. So there's more. I think the term has just been adopted more because people are doing different styles.
And it's also just getting much bigger overall, globally.
Eduardo, we were talking a little bit. We were talking a little bit before before we started recording, just about being a writer who writes about this stuff regularly in this particular moment. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about watching more people pay attention to it and sort of the pros and cons of that.
My inbox is quadrupled in size.
All right.
But it's a lot of people really asking me to do something that will teach even them. You know, a lot of editors are just really open to hearing what we have to say, what Latinx people have to say. And so I think it's been kind of good in a lot of ways. And I just hope a lot of these editors kind of keep that same energy moving forward.
That's right. Know? Keep that same energy in 2019.
I think that Isabella and I are on really like, we both occupy really interesting positions right now with regards to the increasing level of attention given to Latin music. And like Isabella has been an editor at a publication that has been covering Latin culture for years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's my fourth year at Hermezcla this year. So, and it's like a publication's like 10 years old. So.
Yeah. And whereas, you know, I've been at Rolling Stone for 4 years and we only started our Latin vertical like last summer. You know, it's only really been about like 6 or 7 months for us. I mean, before, you know, I would do a best Latin albums of the year at the end of the year.
And then that was that.
And that was that. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I'm in a more, you know, Rolling Stone is a very long running institution that only recently gave space for people to write about Latin music the way that we write about, you know, rock music, pop music, hip hop, whatever. Like, we're only just getting that space.
Right. And the growing pains that go with it. I mean,
yes,
this is
absolutely
a, you know, a classic story that happens over and over again when a genre that was not that was kept on the fringes and then is welcomed into the center of the space. And, you know, there's translation issues, things get lost. Like, there's just, you know, there's a lot of room for concern.
Sure. I feel like I just want to see more responsible trend pieces and more responsible research being done.
Sure.
Because I think,
although don't do trend pieces. Just generally
like,
speaking.
If you, yes,
yes,
I agree.
If you
are assigned one, you know, like I feel that, you know, this is a movement that has existed for a long time. And the narrative is always one of explosion, one of boom, and one of, you know, it's not like this music has just been discovered for the first time among many of us. We've been listening for a long time. And personally, I feel like I want to see more journalists give this music the respect and the attention that it deserves. Like, if anyone made the kinds of like typos or factual errors or like genre miscategorizations that I've seen about hip hop or about rock or any other styles, like, it would be unforgivable as a journalist, you know? But I just personally, I think like it's great that this movement is getting written about more, but I want to see more attention to the history of it. I want to see more attention to its origins and making sure that the reporting is like responsible.
Sure.
So,
and that's why the column that you write is so kind of, you want to talk a little bit about the specifics of that?
Yeah.
And also, how did it come to be? Like, sort of, what was y'all's conversation? Is Isabella your editor?
She is. Yes. She is.
How's Isabella as an editor?
She's great.
I
often tweet about how great she is. She knows. Like, she keeps me from looking dumb.
Number one hallmark of any good editor.
Yep. Right. Absolutely.
Save me from myself.
Right, exactly.
Hi, Karen. Talk about how it came about and then sort of some of the things that you've been talking about.
So, long story short, I was having drinks with somebody who should have known who El General is.
Yeah.
Didn't know. And that made me rush home.
Should we play Muy Bella?
Yeah.
All right. Pedro, are you going to? Yeah. Okay. Pedro's going to drop it in. Shouts to Panama.
I rushed home that night and I wrote this thing about El General, and it was kind of part personal essay, and I sent that to Kyle Kramer at Noisy. Mm-hmm. And he published it.
Kyle.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Shout out to Kyle.
Who was awesome.
Did Kyle leave music currently? He's working.
He's in forestry now.
Forestry?
Yes. He's going to be so happy that I talked about
this. Oh my gosh.
I didn't know that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Keep them trees alive. Okay. All right. Shout out to Kyle Kramer in the forest somewhere.
Yeah.
If they get podcasts there, hopefully we'll see.
So I sent that to Kyle. He published it. And I got this huge feedback because not a lot of people were talking about Panama's role in the whole situation. Mm-hmm. And so that made me realize somebody needed to tell the story. And it's been told, there's mm-hmm. a book, The Wayne Marshall. And,
yeah, of course.
The
edited anthology,
But, I cold pitched Isabella. I said, hey, mm-hmm. I have an idea for this thing. And I really expected her to say, dude, come on. We have, no way. Mm-hmm. And she said yes. And so there we go.
One of the things that is, I think, an ongoing struggle just in how the internet covers things, not specific to this, but just generally speaking, is historical cycles are so short. So, 2018 internet forgets... Obviously, he has never read a book. Forget. But also, things that maybe were written in, 2004 internet, either the links are dead or they're not immediately archived. They're archived in a way that's, searchable. So the cycles keep getting short, which is why it's so important to do historical work. In the press, even if you think, well, maybe people know this.
Sure.
Or maybe 10 years ago, maybe someone did something like this. Mm-hmm. It kind of doesn't matter because the kids who are engaging with the internet right now, who are the most primed for it, probably didn't see the thing.
Yeah.
They probably didn't see the old thing.
They can Google.
They can, but do they though?
No.
They don't.
They don't.
Why is nobody talking about this?
Yes, that's a real... Seriously. That's a thing that people say. And also, and the sort of the kind of corollary to that, and this is something that Mark Richardson, who used to edit Pitchfork, said, I think, when he was here on Popcast last year, which is things that you think there's loads of stuff about on the internet, because you're well, the internet is infinite. So clearly, everything about Panamanian reggaeton is on, or reggae on Espanol in Panama, that's all on there. And then you Google, and by the third page of the results, you're there's nothing left. everything else is just a reblog of something that's, and so there is this kind of need for information. And so that's why it's so urgent, I think, to do this kind of work in this specific moment.
I also think when it comes to reggaeton specifically, it is a music that has penetrated the Latino diaspora, the Latin American diaspora. So a lot of people who speak Spanish, who are from Latin America or whatever, might not actually even know the origins just because, as I said before, it's been this, sort of transformative pop moment, for better or worse. But I think, I think part of that to me was I want to educate a lot of people on what the origins of this music are. Even if you are Spanish speaking, even if you are from Latin America, a lot of people might not know this intricate history.
Yeah,
so
for sure. So more of that, please, in 2019. Super necessary. A little bit of a hard pivot, but... Susie, we were talking about pop punk before.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we play your song?
Yes. Play it away.
Okay. It's Tenemos que Hablar.
I can say it.
If you want to, yeah. Let's listen to Susie's song. Susie, what's the song?
Tenemos que Hablar.
That's right.
Again. miré. Yeah. Fui pa' la disco y viré. Y ni respiré. Bueno, hice un par de amigas nuevas. Pero nada más ahí se queda. Además, ¿tú crees que yo me atreva? Nah, ni aunque una rola me beba. Oh, wey, hablando de eso. Puede ser que yo bien loco me dé un beso. Pero solo eso. Pero solo eso. Y hablando claro, así que dame un beso y pichea, que tenemos que hablar. Oigo tus mensajes cuando dicen que tenemos que hablar. Oigo que yo hice, que yo hice. Dime.
So let's talk about potential pocket histories of pop punk, either in Puerto Rico or the Dominican or anywhere around. Like, where does this come from? What's the sort of, what can be, can we talk a little bit about where this might have come from an influence perspective or from a Bad Bunny as a 12-year-old perspective? Like, what was he listening to and how did this sort of, like, get filtered into the system?
You know, going back to Tiny and Bad Bunny just sort of brainstorming this album, mm-hmm. and what they wanted it to sound like, they were talking about, like, Limp Bizkit and Blink 182, you know, and it really comes through. But actually, what's so funny about the guitar sample is that it's actually a riff that Tiny played himself. He just had it lying around. He was like,
oh, from a previous thing.
Yeah, he was like, Tiny was just jamming at home with his friends and did this kind of like
pop punk
chuggy, like Blink 182 riff. And then he just saved it in his computer. And then when Benito was like, oh, yeah, I want to make a rock song, then Tiny was like, oh, I think I have something, and like went to his hard drive and pulled up the sample. And that's what you hear in the song.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Good backstory.
Yeah.
Shouts to Tiny. Now I know what Tiny's doing with his free time.
Jamming.
Jamming to Blink 182.
And it's so funny because even in the vocal inflections, I mean, Benito is such a good singer. Like, he used to be in a gospel choir, mm-hmm. which is why his voice is so malleable. You know, I mean, it's so distinct. And so incredibly Caribbean, like, but he still has, like, you know, a bit of, like, the Mark Hoppus and Tom DeLonge, mm-hmm. like, back and forth going on in the song, and it's hilarious. It's delightful.
You just mentioned his voice, mm-hmm. and that's something I wanted to talk about, the mm-hmm. specifics of the voice. I actually thought Julianne in her piece had a really interesting, I forget if she used it as an adjective or just as, like, a clause, but she, I think she called it trumpet-like. And I thought that was interesting because it does this thing where it does really announce itself, mm-hmm. but also is kind of like soft and like almost like a little bit chubby at the edges. Like, it's like a little bit thick. And I like that because it's versatile because it works in a lot of different contexts. But I wonder if you guys could talk a little bit about the specificity of his voice and why it's so effective.
It's interesting because I feel like, to me, it's more of like a, I think we've described it as like a pounding baritone in the past. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I feel like the baritone part of it for me is really what gives a lot of his music sentimentality. Mm-hmm. Like the vocality, it's just so, you know, I don't know. I just feel that he's very flexible in that way. And right. a lot of, like, because his music is so sentimental, it's very apt that his voice is deep.
Right. It has that palpable, that thing. That, mm-hmm. Like, it's like coming from, it's like diaphragm stuff.
Definitely.
That's,
yeah.
that's some ish you learn in church choir. I'm just saying.
Which is why there's so many choir vocals on that album.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I would pay to see Bad Bunny perform with the choir.
Oh, my gosh.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, what's up with the choir on the – he should have a tour.
He really should.
He doesn't need a live band. He needs a choir.
He needs a choir and a DJ. Right.
Wow. Free idea. You're welcome.
We'll see, I mean, what he does on tour, too, because he's going on tour this year.
Right.
And Estamos Bien is, like, the gospel song on his album.
So I think Rolandito into that, uh-huh. since they both have, like, the choir, I think they're, like, part of – something. I think, like, in the song before that, I think, like, they make up, like, a mini narrative within the album, and it's just so cinematic because of that, because of the background vocals. And when it goes into Estamos Bien, it just kind of, it's like the pulls you out of the muck, if you will.
Yeah. Let's play. We actually haven't played that. It's Almost Bien is one of the big singles off this record. It was one of the songs that was released before the actual album came out. So let's play that.
El dinero me llueve, me deja diablo que aguacero, en la cuenta un par de cero, y empezamos desde cero, y eso que soy un grosero, que se joda, soy sincero, y si mañana me muero, ya estoy acostumbrado a estar siempre en el cielo, en privado siempre vuelo. Hoy me levanté contento y me levanté feliz, aunque dicen por ahí.
So this song, yes, this song is like, this is, I think I referred to it in my review, it's like sunrise after the long night. This is the real, like you really just feel the clouds parting.
Yeah, and the first thing I realized is, you know, pretty much everybody I know has been listening to that song at least once a day since it came out in the summer, if not many more times a day. And within the context of the album, it felt completely different. Like, I dropped back into my seat.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, like, this is so climactic.
Yeah. I mean, and it's interesting because it does, in the context of the album, it does feel like the fact that this and then Mia are at the end. When I first looked at the track list before I'd listened to it, I was like, oh, he's just like bumping all the
hits to the bottom.
Yeah, just like sort of being like, they're afterthoughts. Like, I'm not stressed about that stuff. Like, yes, it has to be on here, but like, whatevs.
Right.
But actually, from a narrative perspective, there is through line narrative that arrives at that stuff. And again, most people wouldn't think to recontextualize a song that had basically become super popular.
Right.
Most people wouldn't bother. But he's, you know, he clearly
Which,
cares.
Which, again, speaks to how he made an album, you know, an actual album.
Speak on it.
I have a funny anecdote from when I met him at the Latin Grammys rehearsal last year, and I had to wait for him to get off stage, but he was practicing one of his songs and they had to like cut the music, and so he's just kind of milling around on stage and doing all these voices. It's actually like he has a baritone, but it's incredible how wide his vocal range is. He started doing like little kid voices into like his headset. He was like, "Gracias, mommy." And then like and then at some point he started doing like Celine Dion impressions where he was like, "Rah, rah, rah, rah." Like it was like so wild. And he had like these mouse ears on the whole time. I was like doubling over, like laughing in my seat and like hiding behind the chair because I was like crying laughing.
Was this before or after he raved?
This was before he raved.
In flip-flops.
So it just got even
better. To be clear.
Oh, ish. Yeah, so he actually, so like we had our, we had like a really short like 15-minute interview, and then I got a text 2 hours later saying that he was going to go to the Rolling Stone Latin Grammys party, which I totally did not expect him to do. And it was like an all-woman bill, and it was just supposed to be a really like feminist event. Mm-hmm. And so he rolls in with his band of skater boys. Yeah. His entourage, they're all really adorable. They all had these really cute sweaters on. But he shows up in chanclas, like is wearing like board shorts and a hoodie. And he was just like totally gagged at Francisca Valenzuela's set. And Francisca Valenzuela is like this big, like just feminist pop voice from Chile. And he was just like being a fanboy the whole time. But the real magic happened when everyone started dancing. And he just kind of like, he kind of cut into like our dance circle. And I mean, he was totally invited, but he just immediately, what happened was he started flapping his arms.
I thought you were saying, then we kicked him out.
No, we booted him out.
Don't bring that
here. No, he just started flapping his arms. And then like, I started flapping my arms back.
He did like the rave hands
too. And then he started doing the rave hands, like doing figure eights. Uh-huh. And it's one of those things you learn when you grew up in Miami in the late 90s. Mm-hmm. But it was like so crazy. I don't know.
Glow sticks, TK.
He just, for all real? He needed was a pair of glow sticks. It would have been, but no, it was incredible. He's so weird. It's great.
We've managed to get almost, I think, probably an hour into this show. And we have not said the words, "I like it."
Oh.
I'm okay with that. I have no problem with it. But I do think it's notable that we've gotten this far and we haven't talked about basically the song that he was on that was the number one song in the country a few months ago. Let's listen to Bad Bunny on I Like It, which also features J Balvin and Cardi B.
Tú compras todas las Jolambo, a mí me las regalan. I spend in the club, what you have in the bank. This is the new religion bank, el Latino gang. Está toda servieta, pero es que en el closet tengo mucha grasa. Ya mudé la Gucci pa' dentro de casa, yeah. A ti no te conocen ni en plaza. El diablo me llama, pero Jesucristo me abraza. Guerrero como Eddie, que viva la raza, yeah. Me gustan boricua, me gustan cubana. Me gusta el acento de la colombiana. Como me ve el culo la dominicana. Lo rico que me chinga la venezolana. Andamos activos, perico, pim, pim. Billetes de 100 en el maletín. Que retumbe el bajo y Valentín, yeah. Aquí prohibido amar, dile Charitín. Que perpico le tengo claritín. Yo llego a la disco y se forma el motín.
So, do we like it? Like, no, seriously. It's like, seriously. It's not my favorite Bad Bunny song necessarily. And it's not the least likely Bad Bunny song. That's probably the Will Smith one.
Oh, man.
We don't talk about that.
I don't. Like, I just feel like it's like Bad Bunny for dads, kind of. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, it's like not as bad as you would think it would be, but it's also, let's not, yeah. It's
Bad Bunny for tías.
Yeah. Yep.
Your tías, tía.
Yeah, maybe.
Let's talk about that record from a musical perspective, but also from a social relevance perspective. A meaning. Is there meaning in it, in addition to, is it good?
I love I Like It, actually. Mm-hmm. As someone who grew up in a, like, Spanglish speaking family, I think it's probably like one of the most accessible things that I've heard on like top 40 radio personally. Mm-hmm. And I think it speaks to a lot of us who are bicultural.
It also speaks cross generations.
Yeah, cross generations.
It's based on a very famous Boogaloo song. I mean, mm-hmm. this is for your tia and also for your little cousin. It's literally, it speaks to everybody. Did it feel to you guys like it did something for Bad Bunny that other songs had not done? He released 50 songs, in 2018. You know, is it outsized only in importance only because it ended up as the number one song in the country? Or does it also actually add something and deepen his narrative?
I think it shows that he can be the biggest pop star. You know, if he wants to, and if he continues on this trajectory, I think that song showed that he feels comfortable in that space and that he's a natural. You know? So whether the song is good or not, you know, I think it's good.
Mm-hmm.
I think it borders a little bit on harmful in a sense, because we're trying to avoid this whole concept of crossover a little bit. And I think it kind of borders on that. I don't know how Isabella feels about that, but
if there's anyone that's going to make me like a kitschy Boogaloo sampling song, it's Bad Bunny and Cardi and Balvin.
So, right. Yeah.
So, I feel like that.
Probably in that order.
Yeah. You know, you asked what did this song do for Bad Bunny? And I think, as Eduardo said, it showed that he could be the pop star that he wanted to be. And I think, more importantly, it showed that he didn't have to risk anything of who he was before. You know, I think if you look at the lyrics, he makes a lot of, again, Puerto Rican references that people might not understand if you're not Puerto Rican. He says, "A ti no te conocen ni en Plaza." Plaza is a very famous mall in Puerto Rico. And it's like, bro, they don't even know you at the mall. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the biggest mall. Everyone comes to this mall and no one knows who you are.
Right.
So, like, So I think, you know, for someone who might not know Spanish or might not speak Spanish, I think you know, those kinds of references might go over their head, but mm-hmm. I feel like it shows that he can be as himself as he wants to be.
Yeah. I feel like as we're going out, because he has so much music, is there a less heralded Bad Bunny moment, whether from 2018 or before, that you guys want to bring light to?
Pulling up Bad Bunny essentials.
I know.
Oh my God.
Actually, I think one that I feel like people might not know is like that Bad Bunny collaborated with El Alfa before this album on Demagogue Gigogu. And
which he shouts out in La Romana.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. So I feel like that was like the first time he did a like Dominican Dembo song.
So let's play that. Yeah.
I'm ready.
Bendiga. Aquí se hace lo que yo diga. Tú eres bueno, pero esto es otra liga. Quítate, no siga. Yeah. Me rocan y salen palomí. Los bacanísimos, el Ebori con Domi. Ya todos esos culos yo me los comí. Y él es tu dueño sin condoni. Me acostumbré a ser ganador. Lo tengo sin batería y le rompí el cargador. Tengo el libro trabajando de productor. Pero tranquilo, Jesucristo es mi manejador. La baby dijo que no trae ropa interior, que le duele pero le gusta el dolor. Louis V, Prada, Gucci, Christian Dior. Dime en qué soy, en qué color, y yo te lo compro. Pero dale, baila como Trump. Yo compro el arroz. Siempre Ferragamo, no me arroque con retorno.
You had mentioned earlier wanting to talk about Creepy Kush. It's not even technically his song.
As with so many songs that are not his songs, that end up becoming his songs.
Which is great. He got to exist on other people's spaces.
Exactly.
And kind of hone his craft there. But that song is his, no matter what. Like, it's just, he just owns it. And I think that's a moment that, you know, I saw a lot of chatter early on, a lot of people saying, oh, this guy's just Future in Spanish. And I think a track like this kind of shows that there's a different cadence going on. There's mm-hmm. a different, there's something that comes from having grown up with reggaeton and other genres.
Sure.
I think this is one of those moments where you start seeing it's not just trap in Spanish. It's its own thing.
Well, just to build on that a little bit, how do you guys feel about Latin, like the framing Latin trap? Because I have always felt it seemed limiting. We're not explicitly, if there's borrowing, it's not just of that one specific thing. And I felt like, especially when people started talking about Latin trap, they were just sort of like jamming a lot of things under that umbrella that didn't necessarily sound alike.
Well, that's an interesting thing because I recently met Fuego and he was talking about how what he does is not Latin trap. Mm-hmm. He's very adamant about saying that what he does is just trap music and mm-hmm. that he sings in Spanish sometimes, which is, you know, yeah, that makes sense. But he also has like trap chata songs, so it's kind of confusing. But he kept reiterating, like, you know, oh, no, Latin trap, that's its own thing. Those people are doing a different thing. I'm just doing trap, and I know Spanish.
And also, I feel like you would see, like, Spanish language rappers who just were, they were basically, like, New York rappers right. from the 90s.
Right. Exactly.
And all of a sudden, they were like, well, that's a Latin trap rapper. And you'd be like, well, is it?
That's yeah. To me, the term is kind of weird because I feel like it doesn't include the fact that there are both Black and non-Black Latinos who've been involved in hip-hop
mm-hmm. yep.
for a very right. long time.
Sure.
So to me, it's just kind of a weird designation of this, maybe a particular type of sound, mm-hmm. what we consider trap music
right.
or whatever, but like in Spanish. It's a weird nebulous thing. It's like, is it about language? Is it about ethnicity? Is it about identity? But I don't know. I feel kind of strange about it, to be honest.
Yeah, it feels very, it feels imperfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So maybe we'll walk away from that designation in 2019. Susie, do you have a low-key banger you want to put us onto? Or a high-key banger?
High-key banger. I really love Soy Peor.
Like, yeah. Yeah, we skipped right
drama.
Over
drama.
Yeah, we skipped right
the
over. We shouldn't
drama.
Have. Yeah. So that's 2016.
Just go off, Benito. like it's also his most Hot Topic song.
Oh,
in my opinion.
They sell Bad Bunny shirts at Hot
yes,
Topic now.
They do.
Oh, I gotta go back.
We texted about this.
We did.
We did, but I'll share it with the rest of the people. I was at a Hot Topic in August in New Mexico and I copped the Bad Bunny shirt and a G-Dragon shirt. That was
That
was like clearly like left over from 2014.
Yeah. what happened to him?
Super on the bottom of the pile. I think he's in military service right now.
Oh.
But it was one of those things where it was like, you know, like three t-shirts for 20, you know, so I was just like digging. But Bad Bunny was like great placement, you know, like right on top. And then I just kept digging. I was like, okay. So anyway, shouts to the buyer at Hot Topic, the merchandiser who is clearly on the pulse. We support you. Maybe we'll have you on podcast to talk about mall merch. It's actually kind of a good idea.
I'm just going to put this out into the universe. If somebody can mash up, like, Bring Me the Horizon and Soy Peor, that would rock my world.
I'm about it.
I'm just saying.
So let's listen to Soy Peor, not the Bring Me the Horizon version. It's the original. And also, this is sort of his second hit, third hit. Like, this is, like, pretty early.
One of his first solo songs, for sure.
Right. So this is Soy Peor.
Salí jodido la última vez que en alguien yo confié. Me compro una foría, Cupido se la vacíe. No me vuelvo a enamorar, no. No me vuelvo a enamorar. Sigue tu camino que sin ti me va mejor. Ahora tengo a otras que me lo hacen mejor. Si antes yo era un hijo de puta, ahora soy peor. Ahora soy peor, ahora soy peor por ti. Sigue tu camino que sin ti me va mejor. Ahora tengo a otras que me lo hacen mejor. Si antes yo era un hijo de puta, ahora soy peor. Ahora soy peor, ahora soy peor por ti. Hoy yo no quiero fumar regular. Tráigame un kush que me haga sentir espectacular. Para celebrar que ya no estás tú para especular. Ni joderme por todos los culos que tengo en el celular. Hoy se bebe, hoy se sale. Ser buen y fiel ya de nada vale. Por mujeres como tú es que dicen que todos los hombres somos iguales. Si no me conoces, no me señales.
I wonder if you guys can talk a little bit about what you think the next year, 2 years, like, this, we still feel so early in the story. I mean, we're talking about a person who released one of the most musically adventurous albums of the year, was on like 50 different songs, is just immensely popular, but it still feels like we're very close to the beginning of the story as opposed to the end of the story. So I wonder what you guys are on the lookout for from San Benito.
He has that EP coming out with J Balvin this year, Oasis is what it's supposed to be called. So I'm just holding out for that. We'll see how it goes. I mean, they're both titans in their own right, you know. But yeah, I'm also excited to see where Benito takes his, like, political consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see him do more artistic things like this album was. I think this album was very thoughtful and careful. And I want to see him do more of that. I think he said himself that the last 2 or 3 years, he said in an interview with Billboard, I think, that he's done what the business required him to do.
Mm.
So whether that's like the pop collaboration or, you know, and I think now I'm hoping that this chapter opens up a lot more flexibility for him. So he doesn't have to be doing, like, you know, the label made crossover type
it's,
of thing.
It's interesting because you experience him almost as so sui generis and just kind of like just appearing wherever he seems to want to appear. So I wouldn't have thought of him feeling label pressure or business pressure. It doesn't seem like a thing that motivates or it shapes him, but it's interesting that it's on his mind.
Yeah, I mean, maybe in what I mean by that is just that as one of the biggest vocalists in this genre and this movement, it's no surprise that all the older generation Latino pop stars would want to hop on the Bad Bunny wave and collaborate with him, you know? And I think
J-Lo.
That's why I like the Ricky Martin thing, because I feel like that wasn't Ricky Martin trying to do anything other than be like, here's my props and you don't even have to give me credit.
Sure,
right. I think
sure.
That was such a flex, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, there were a few collaborations like that last year that mm-hmm. I think maybe he doesn't have to do this year anymore.
Not even for the lols?
Not even for the lols.
There's still a few lols to be squeezed out of this. How much Bad Bunny does Will Smith listen to? Just do you think a lot, a little bit? Like,
Him and Nicky Jam are like the only music he listens to right now. Which is cool. It's awesome.
If I'm not mistaken, wasn't there an Instagram story of Will Smith when he went to the World Cup with Nicky Jam?
There's another one where he did like a remix to or something of like...
I can't quite remember.
But he was doing the dance to Ekis, I think.
Yeah. I mean, he has a lot of cool stuff on Instagram.
It's true. Everybody follow Will Smith.
Jam-related content.
Yeah, it's true. Follow Will Smith for all the Nicky Jam content.
In the behind the scenes of the Está Rico video, they posted something on Instagram as well, and it's just like Bad Bunny making fun of Will Smith's Spanish and Will Smith going, Bad Bunny, babe.
Oh, yeah. In like 30 different places, right?
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
Which my 4-year-old son does all the time now. Like, he'll be
he says,
around.
Bad Bunny, babe.
Yeah. And to plug my son.
Yes, no, please. You should bring him next time.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, please. Awesome. Let's go out with a sentimental favorite for me on the Bad Bunny record. If you like new wave and synth pop, it's Otra Noche in Miami. Featuring Will Smith.
Hey.
I can only dream.
Yo soy un punto de la noche y salgo como de costumbre. Prendas en diamantes que siguen cuando me alumbre. Me diferencio de la muchedumbre. A mi estilo puede que no te acostumbre. No sé si irme en el Mercedes o en el Maserati. Modelos extranjeras que me dicen papi. Están tirando el cel, ya me quieren ver. Seguramente ya están locas por coger. Pero soy yo quien les llevo la champaña. Si no es como él, la rubia no se baña. Me voy de viaje y a las 2 horas me extraña. O mejor dicho, el dinero que me acompaña.
That is our show. Thank you to Eduardo, Susie, and Isabella for coming through for this conversation. You can listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us your deepest Nicky Jam Will Smith cuts and also your 5 favorite Bad Bunny posse cuts to podcast@nytimes.com. Maybe we'll just devote a whole episode later this year to songs in which Bad Bunny is one of 9 people, but you wouldn't know it because nobody else is relevant. You could subscribe to podcasts anywhere you get your audio content. Lord knows I don't know where to get audio content, but I'm sure it's out there on Spotify, Stitcher, and so on and so forth. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media, who is going to convince his daughter to trade BTS for Bad Bunny, and we will be back next week. Otra noche sin ti.